My name is Arno Glitz, my wife Ruth Glitz. We are both from Brazil. We belong to the Evangelical Church of Lutheran Confession in Brazil. And one of the wonderful things that are happening to us since some 2 years ago is that we are here in Holden Village. We never even knew that Holden Village existed. And today I'm going to share with you, we are trying to share with you, and later on also have possible a question session, and the story of the handicapped as it is told in the Bible. In Brazil we call the mentally retarded as exceptional, and I know that this is also an expression used in many parts of the United States, so whenever I say exceptional I mean the mentally retarded. And you, as we have a mentally retarded daughter who is now 27, her name is Juliana. It is quite natural that whenever I talk of handicapped, it's mostly for the mentally retarded, although all of this applies also to other kinds of deficiencies. Lame, you call them? Lame, the blind, the deaf. I think that in order to, let's say for us, to go towards, as human beings, to go towards the experience of having to live and to love a daughter who is exceptional, I think the basis is this new evangelism that the Protestant churches have adopted since the last 30, 40 years, and whose base is the famous phrase of Reinhold Niebuhr, sometimes quoted as being of Karl Barth, and which says that a Christian to live his life, he has to live it, a Christian life, not in one hand the Bible, in the other hand the daily newspaper, which means you have to live it according to what is happening to you and not according to something that is the old pietistic idea. The Bible. Very in the beginning of the Bible, you already encounter handicap. And in Exodus 4, 10 to 12, we already encounter the first handicap. It is Moses. And when God said to Moses, "You go there and say to Pharaoh, free my people," Moses was all shattered, you know. And he answered he didn't want to do it. And I think that he was very human, because we never want to do what God wants with us. Although we pray every day, "Your will be done," we want to do our will and not his will. And Moses answered unto the Lord, "Oh," no, I have to do it the way I think he did it. Oh, he stuttered. Oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, nor since you have spoken unto thy servant, but because I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue." And the Lord answered to Moses, "Who made man's mouth? Or who made the dumb, or the deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Didn't I do it? I, the Lord. Now therefore, Moses, go, and I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you shall say." This is the first encounter. And here, God takes upon himself, in his own words, he takes upon himself the responsibility for the existence of deficient, handicapped, or handicapped persons. And I think this is very important, that he himself takes the responsibility for that. Now we have, on our reflection, to think about of when this happened. This here happened more or less 1,500 years before Christ. But it was written down around the year 1000 before Christ, in the times of Solomon, when the temple was built. And which was the historical and geographical and cultural background at those times? And only if we put it in this context that we will understand the importance, the very importance of this text. In order to understand what the Israel was in those days, the Jews were in those days, we have to go to the temple. Because the temple was the real mirror of Jewish society and of Jewish cultural traditions and history. It was the heritage of all this Jewish heritage since beginning from Abraham. And the temple had, we know, a place called, I translate it from Portuguese, if I'm wrong, please correct me, the holiest of the holies. And in this holiest of the holy, they had the ark, and inside the ark, the tables of the Ten Commandments. And this was closed, and there was a curtain before that, separating it from the rest. And if you go to a synagogue, you will still find this curtain today. And this curtain was the one that was that cut or split on the moment that Jesus died. Remember, Matthew tells about this. And then in front of the holiest of the holy, there was the holy place where the priests were. And in front of that was a place for the people of Israel. But who were the people of Israel? Only perfect men, who were perfect in body and in mind. And then there was a forum. A forum, I think it's a right word in English. A patio, we would say. A forum. For the women, they couldn't enter that room of the people of Israel. They were not considered as complete citizens, as complete persons of God. And still outside, there was a place for the Gentiles, the curtain room outside of the temple for the Gentiles, those who did not belong to the people of the Lord. And there also, only there, very outside of the temple, and completely segregated from the people of Israel, from the people of God, was also the place for the lame, the blind, the deaf, the sick, the poor, the beggars. We have in Deuteronomy 15:21. In Deuteronomy, when God gave his laws, and he said that the firstling males that come of your herd and your flock, and he said in 21, see, this was for sacrifice and for animals, and if there be any blemish therein, is one of these animals, one of these firstborn be lame or blind, or have any ill blemish, you shall not sacrifice it unto the Lord, your God. So, this was something very fundamental for the Israel people then. And there is the story of the son of Saul. Is that right? Saul. The king before David. Saul. How do you pronounce him?
That's right.
Saul. Ah, sorry. In 2 Samuel 9:8, and the youngest son, David, killed everybody of Saul's family, and he did not kill the youngest son, whose name was Mephibosheth. In Portuguese we say Mephibosheth. I don't know how you say it in English, I'm sorry, really. But in 2 Samuel 9, here it is, 2 Samuel 9:8. David had asked Mephibosheth to come to his table, and so Mephibosheth dwelt in Jerusalem. He did eat continually at the king's table, and he was lame on both feet. He considered himself as being completely unworthy to be on the Lord's table, or at the king's table, because he said, he had bowed himself and said, is that your servant? What is it that you should look upon such a dead dog as I am? This was the context in which God took the responsibility for the handicap. And this is very important, because we have to see that this was something completely against the customs of the Israel people, of God's people. And it is still today, we could say many times, this discrimination is a matter of fact in our society. But not only God takes upon himself the responsibility, he also extends his protection, as Leviticus 19:14 tells us. Leviticus 19:14, when God says, "You shall not curse the deaf, and you shall not put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God, because I am the Lord." Not only responsibility, not only protection, but God also extends to the deficient persons, he extends a guarantee. And the best place where we have this is in Isaiah. Is that right? Isaiah. So you will be correcting me. Isaiah 42. When God was very mad at the people of Israel, and when all his wrath, is that right? Mm-hmm. Wrath came out in this phrase. In the verses 14 and 15, he says, "I have long time holden my peace. I have been still, and I have refrained myself. Now, however, I will cry like a travailing woman, and I will destroy and devour at once. I will make waste mountains and hills. I will dry up all the herds, and I will make the rivers islands, and I will dry up the pools." This is God in his worst wrath. And immediately on verse 16 he says, "And I will bring the blind by a way that they do not know. I will lead them in paths that they have never known. And I will make darkness light before them, and the crooked things I will make straight. These things I will do unto the blind, and I will not forsake them." You see, the same God who was so in such a rage against the perfect people did at the same moment extend his guarantee, not only protection and responsibility, towards the handicapped. On such theological positioning, we will examine the situation of deficient persons. First of all, handicap, deficient person, is a very ecumenical thing. It happens in all races, in all classes, how you could say that, financial classes, and classes of people, all colors, all races, all classes, all countries, all states, everywhere, all religions. It just cuts across the line. It's a statistical fact. And we know that statistics is something that we don't care. For instance, you will read in a newspaper, over this weekend of July 4th, there will be died 300 persons in accidents on the highways in the United States, or a certain state in the United States. I don't know the exact figures of the United States. I think they're higher. But you don't care about them until the moment that your brother died in such an accident. When the statistics come to you, when they're personal, where they are no longer impersonal. This is the same with the parents and with the families of handicapped people, or of the handicapped themselves. The handicapped are more or less divided into 50% of them, more or less, are retarded. The other 25% deaf, 20% blind, and 5% lame. Fortunately, due to the anti-polio vaccination programs going on in the world, the lame will increasingly decrease, for God's sake. The mentally retarded in the developed countries, in the first world countries, usually you put the figure at 3%. In Denmark it is one, came down already to 1.8% of the persons who are born will have a certain mental retardation. Now of each 100 persons who are mentally handicapped, 80% are educable. Is that right? They can write at least, let's say, do 5 years of school, the grade school, learn some writing and so forth, and will have a profession, and this will lead up to a quite independent life. Some 14% are trainable. They're not educable. They're trainable to do things. Kai, that young boy who was here, a Mongoloid, he is between the two. Our daughter is a purely trainable, she is not educable. So she will always have a semi-dependent life. And only 6% are those who will always be very dependent because they are not even trainable to something. Which is, let us say, the human, what you feel inside yourself with a handicap. It's a great suffering for the whole family. A tremendous suffering. And it is, I was told by experts that the deepest suffering, psychological suffering, is of those who became lame because of polio. Because they were perfect. And then they became lame. Why? Because either there was no vaccination, or their parents or somebody did not do the vaccination in due time. So they start with a, let us say, with a rage against the whole world, and to swallow that, to adapt it, to transform themselves into kind human people is a very difficult way, and it is a probation. The deaf and the blind, fortunately, are very well educable nowadays. In the older days, blind people were put into institutions and you forgot about them. Nowadays you find them on the streets, you find them everywhere. And they can lead a perfectly normal life. And it is very interesting how blind people can see. I will tell you of a person who is blind, who was blind born. He was trained and educated and all that. And he became a teacher for other people who become blind later on. And there is a couple we knew, and they both, man and woman, husband and wife, became blind over 60 years of age because of diabetes. And so they hired this blind teacher to teach them. Well, and he had to go from one part of the town, of the city, to the other, changing buses. He did all that. Then he had to get down of the bus at a certain bus point, walk some 5 blocks, and then still turn to the left or to the right, I don't remember, and come to the house of these people. And when one of these mornings he arrived and said, "Oh, Pippi, you see how beautiful the flowers are today." He saw them. Because actually when we see a certain color, it is the photons that come from this color and enters our eyes to the retina, and go to the brain and left side, right side, I don't know, in any case, they go to the brain, and then it comes back as a color, as your yellow blouse. Well, but these photons come from here, and if I can't see, perhaps I can train sensitivity here on my skin and I actually see it. Many other people can see on the fingertips. It's so sensitive that they really can see things. Some 30 years ago, yes, up till some 30 years ago, these people were considered as useless, just as the old Jews considered them. And when you go now to the Olympics of deficient persons, of the handicapped, you will see basketball games of very good teams of lame persons. You will appreciate rhythmic dances of deaf people. And you will see, in Brazil at least, soccer games of blind people and even the goalkeeper jumping to get a ball. And the ball is a jingle. And it is all by ear that the blind see where the ball is. With the mentally retarded, the question of great suffering that goes with the parents and many times also with the brothers is that all we have is inbuilt in us a certain sense of immortality. And we want, as we are not immortal, we want to live something through our children who get from us external aspects. They get from us cultural heritage, a religious cosmovision. And with the mentally retarded, this chain is broken. So, then we have to rebuild something out of the shreds through an internal struggle to accept this here. I had a friend, they had only one daughter. And one day he was complaining to me, was saying, oh, this is terrible. Today, this night, I have going to go with my daughter to a dance. She wants to go to a dance, and I'm not in a disposition for that. And I told him, yeah, if my daughter could go to a dance. And then I came home and I spoke this to my wife. Yes, we are taking our daughters many times to dances, doing things she likes. She likes very much to drink coffee. This is taking her to a dance to make a coffee for her. Not too strong, but to make a coffee. And this happens to all kinds of handicap that they have, their suffering. One of the things is, the first reaction is to reject these children, these kids. That's the first reaction we have. People who have never dealt with mongoloid have a reaction. They don't look nice. They look something ugly. They look something, you know, you have. Only when you get accustomed to that, that you accept, if you even have nothing to do with them, that you will accept them, that they sit in your circle. And that's true. Not only with them, this is true also with other handicap. But then as a Christian, when you know that that these people have the protection of God and the guarantee of God, then you become active. Remember that Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. Way is something dynamic. It is not static. It's a way you have to go. And he used the verbs, go and preach the gospel to all nations. Come you to me who are full of, who are overloaded. Go and seek the kingdom of God and its justice. These are our verbs of action. And this is also what happens with the handicapped and their families. They join together in the United States and National Association of Retarded Citizens. In other countries, we call them Association of Parents and Friends of the Exceptional. We got in Brazil, even in our constitution, a paragraph to an article guaranteeing education for the mentally retarded. This all proves something else happens. Doctors begin to specialize in this field. Some 30 years ago, you didn't have this. All of a sudden, you have a tomography to do with your kids. You have psychologists who specialize in this field. And then they learn many things. They learn that the right and the left side of the brain have different functions, and that you can use the right when the left is damaged, as it is in our daughters. You have teachers who specialize themselves in pedagogic ways to educate, to be and educate the handicapped of all sorts. And we learn a lesson of patience. I think that if a handicap is a lesson in patience, and you need patience, and you need patience, and you need patience. And all these people, the doctors, psychologists, all these, they are just like Simon the Cyrenian, or how you pronounce it, Cyrenian, I don't know, the one who helped Jesus carry the cross. Simon the Cyrenian, Luke 23-26. When you have accepted all this, a new universe opens to yourself. You feel joy for little things. When we discovered that our daughter can answer a telephone, and this was all by a chance because Ruth was not at home, and she didn't want to go with my wife to the supermarket, so she stayed home. And when Ruth came home, Juliana said, "Lo means telephone. Somebody telephoned." "Yeah." "Well, who did?" "Me, yeah," means, would say, "me." "Imen." "Women." "A woman." "Woman." 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 "Okay. Well, who, which woman?" "Ah." "Ok" means spectacle. "Okay." And then she said, "Ah, Iris, Iris." "Okay, it was Iris." Then we discovered, because Iris had telephoned and Ruth was not there, and she went there and just attended the telephone. So we discovered this, and it's great joy for her. It's great joy for us. When we are telephoning to a friend, she's always at the telephone and wants to telephone also. She wants to communicate. They want to communicate. They want to laugh. They are creatures full of love. You can see when a blind person, when he walks on the streets, he's walking alone, he's happy because he's still doing things without any support of anybody. And when he comes across him and somebody tells him, "Now it's red," and then, "Now you can go," he's happy for that. He feels that he is part of mankind. There is something that everybody feels about handicap that is a sensation of guilt. And Jesus gave us, I think, the best lesson that we can have in John 9:1-4, which says, "And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, 'Master, who sinned, this man or his parents, for him to be born blind?' And Jesus answered, 'Neither this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him.'" And I think that this is a very general situation, that we always feel guilty. It is the first reaction of parents of blind, of parents of deaf, of parents of lame. For instance, Dan, who was here, who had only a left forearm, and the right arm, he had only these two fingers, and stumbles of fingers, not even complete. He was born this way. And parents, the first thing is, what did we do? This is a punishment for a sin that we committed. And even the disciples of Jesus, who were with him always, and all the days, and who learned from him, and he gave them all days, during whole days, examples of love, and that God is love, even they reacted the same way as we did. Proof that they were very human. When we consider, can you imagine the tremendous amount of energy spent over centuries and millenniums of mothers especially, but let's say parents in the general, but especially the mothers, of mongoloid children, of persons who have the Down syndrome, who ask themselves this question? He was born mongoloid, Kai, for instance. What did we do? Till it was discovered only some 30 years ago that this is a genetic question that happens due to a genetic accident at the moment of conception. At the very moment of conception, it is an accident. That one of the 46 pairs of chromosomes has three legs instead of being a pair. And many times you have two of them, so it is a more serious case. And we have this question of guilt. Not only the parents, the brothers, the persons themselves, but also society points to me and says, "See, they have a deaf child. They did something wrong." And all this we did then, and we do today in spite of God's own given directions, as I have read to you. And God was always very inequivocal in his promise to congregate the exceptional.
And Jeremiah tells, in Jeremiah 31, 8 to 9,
when the people were begging to God, O Lord, save your people, the remnant of Israel. And he answered, Behold, I will bring them from the north country, from Babylon, and I will gather them from the coast of the earth, and with them I will gather the blind and the lame, the women with child and herd, the travelled with child together. They also will come with weeping and with supplication, and I will lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of water in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble, because I am the Father of Israel. David had already shown that concern by asking Mephibosheth to be at his feet. But only with our Lord Jesus Christ that the promise of God, that the grace of God, and especially the promise, came to final sanctification. You will see in Matthew 11:5, when John Baptist sent disciples to ask Jesus if he was really the Messiah. And Jesus answered, Go and tell John again those things which you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. Still more direct, it was given to us in Luke 14, 21, at the great banquet of the Lord, of the king, when he the king made a banquet and he invited his best friend. And one answered, I cannot go because I bought a piece of land and need to see. The other said, I am going to marry good earth and cannot go. The third said, I have to see some cattle I bought and all that. And then the king became very enraged, and he said to his servant, when the master of the house, his enemy, said to his servant, Go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in here the poor, the maimed, the house, and the blind. Those were the ones who came to the table of the Lord. The ones who the people of God maintained outside of the temple. And the primary act that Jesus did on Wednesday of the week that he was crucified, when he too had cleaned the temple and had thrown out the merchants all that. And he said, My house shall be the house of prayer. And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple and he healed them. And by doing this, he finally realized, he finally did what was promised on that day in Nazareth, when he came to Peter and he opened the scripture, and from the scripture he read what was written in the book of Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written as follows. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he anointed me, he sent me to preach the gospel to the poor, he sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the prisoners and recovering of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty all those who are doomed. And to keep the 70 years of the Lord, this was his promise when he began his ministry among us. And he realized it when he received all those who were hated and discriminated in the temple as being real children of God. At the recent assembly of the World Council of Churches, let's see today, what do we care about? The thing is church is curious. Well, we do a lot of church here. We do, yeah. We do piety regularly, but do we do really the work that is needed to be done? And at the Assembly of the World Council, on the issue number 4, the piety is healing and sharing life in community. And there was approved by the Assembly a document that is what you could call a pastoral for the handicapped. And within the Catholic Church has begun in some cities a pastoral work for the handicapped. And our church is in that. It is something more than only showing character. Here in the assembly, where in the front there was always translation for deaf people. There were many lame on wheelchairs all over the assembly among the 900 delegates. And there was even a mentally retarded girl who had some comprehension of what was going on. Handicaps in a family bring new values to people, new values to people. The perception that our willing at the monetary value, our willing at the material value, is not life. The life of the world is real when you get whipped through the suffering of such an experience. Look at the Kennedy family in the United States. The second of the seven children, the second is Rosemary, a Mongoloid, who is still living in an institution in the state of Wisconsin. De Gaulle had a mentally retarded daughter. Suffering is possible only where there is love. And I think that the best lesson we always get, and this in the beginning you cannot have it, you have it only over the years, is given us in Romans 8:28, where Paul writes that all that happens is for the good, for those who love God. And this is difficult for us all. I think that the lesson that we could get out of all the texts of the Bible that I cite, that I told you that exist, that would constitute what could be called a theology of the handicap, with excuses and apologies to the pastors and theologians, that the handicap does not want clarity, he wants comprehension and understanding. He does not want pity, he wants that he cares. He doesn't want paternalism, so very common in Latin America, and we are always taken with our emotions. He wants integration in our society. Such integration has happened at the benefit of the king, as Paul says. Well, this is what we have to say to you. We are open to questions. I think that in everybody's family there are some handicaps. Who of you have mentally retarded in the family, or not in the inner family, but say the family with the uncles and mentally retarded? You have?
Yes, so Down syndrome. My nephew is Down syndrome.
And you?
And my nephew.
And you?
My sister.
Or the sister. Also, Down syndrome is different.
No, it's just a term momentum kind of.
Has energy and oxygen. Lack of oxygen.
Maybe
I
don't know.
You don't know. And blind in family.
Is that
right? You have?
Yeah. My son and daughter are both albino. They're running around out there.
And they are?
They're visually impaired.
And visually impaired, but they're not blind.
No.
How good?
The boy is about 24 years. The similar between 22 and 24 years.
Well, you have to explain, I don't know what that means.
Legally, he's probably blind. He hasn't had an evaluation yet that really could pinpoint exactly what his vision is, but he's able to get around and see things and see people adapt. He can read it by school. So our struggle right now is in school, is learning to read in a difficult time.
Mr.
Strutt,
yeah. Can I say, they will come over and together they with you.
Yeah. He's very fortunate, and he went to preschool There's a class available for people to take too. And people that have had this analysis, if you had been through all this, and in fact, his vision and her vision was just about the same.
Well, you guys very well know, because I first told her, and I didn't even realize that there was a vision.
I'm actually thinking much better. She's been invited to do it in about 2070. And she had a hard time up close, I
think.
Like the deal,
you have to
see the big one.
Yeah. And Beth?
I think it's kind of a racer thing. That's something I can almost anticipate. Because in my mother's family, most of the adults have experienced deafness. I have cousins that are deaf on both of you.
Yeah, it's my people. It's complete. So you can't. It's a question you should get in there to get out the dividends. Let's talk in very materialistic terms. But everybody understands you want dividends. But whenever you get into there, blind and deaf people, you can make this capital work. And it will just come out. The mentally retarded have, however, a smaller capital. So the dividends are small. But you still have dividends. And Lane. No?
Oh, my mother was blind.
Born Lane.
She wasn't born. She wasn't born Lane, but she, when she was real small, she lost the
kneecap.
So she was walked on crutches and everything.
Yeah, in those days, I also had everything with no difficulty.
Like you said, she didn't want pity, she didn't want her operation.
That's it. This is, these are things. And as I said, it's a statistical thing. You don't care about it till it happens to you. Then you care because then it's personal. It's no longer a cold figure. I would like about the blind tell you a story. We went in a, recently I took a small course in psychology. And the teacher, he is a Catholic priest. And he's one of the outstanding figures in the parapsychological movement in the world and all that stuff. Well, and then he was telling about telepathy. Well, and he said that one of the things you can do, that you put the band in your eyes and so forth, and then you make the person stand here, and then you put your watch in the, let's say in their chair or so forth. Let's say in this case here, you take one of the watches, your watch, and you put it on the back chair, and the person here will say, where's the watch? What is eyes on your chair the yellow blouse and so. And he said that there was a question. This is telepathy, but this takes a lot of energy because the person is thinking where the watch is. And the other one has to catch this energy, this mental energy, and transform it where it is. And then he had a teenager, a girl, and he said that usually persons are able to do this 3 or 4 the utmost 5 times because it takes so much energy that from then onwards they will miss it. I mean, they will no longer know exactly where the watch was touched. And the watch or any other thing. But then he had a girl who was standing there and she popped under that shit. And it went down 8 times. And he said, can't see. There is no such a thing as such telepathic energy. Can't see. And then he noticed that the girl stands on his face. With her fingers right out. He said, she seems really intuitive. She wasn't blind.
So they put bandages around her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then and she missed
all of them. She didn't know anything any longer. She really thought,
Timothy. This question of Hawkins. It is very interesting how these people, they train themselves to use the other sensitivities that our body has. Because we have not only sensitivity here on our fingertips, we have it all over the body. That's the case of that teacher who saw, he really saw. Because the Hawkins came here and he said, he saw this thing. He really knew it. And then, for instance, industry has discovered that people who have to work in very noisy environments with a lot of decibels, that the best people to put there are the best. They really give a very good productivity because they are not disturbed by that. And you know that I think that in many of your telephone companies, perhaps you don't know, but blind people attend the telephone. They have a special switchboard for blind. And they attend the telephone better than seeing people. Because they're not so much distracted. They do their work. And all these things are being worked out. The new method of teaching kids. Children came out from where? From the mental interest, was the Montessori method or other methods, more real methods, naturally. To teach mentally retarded children or half retarded or something like that, to have them, they begin to realize what you have to do, and then come the methods that the normal children will learn in half the time, which is this method. And not only in medicine, how many things came out of the study and the science going after the causes of the handicap, of why people become handicapped, all the genetics. Science. One of the first discoveries was the genetic accident for Down syndrome. And all of this, now you see, you read the newspapers on Time Magazine, you read the new genetic engineering. All this has a beginning. Man wants to know why. Why is this happening? And why we should not have guilt complex?
Well, I think if you don't know, if you have any questions that you could answer this great question, just feel free.
I have one comment. I drove a school bus for 2 weeks this summer to take handicapped children to a special school. And the first day I went as the aide, which means I was in personal contact with each of the 9 children. And someone else drove the bus. The rest of the time I drove. And I had a feeling of panic because I thought, how am I going to see that each of these children are strapped in the seat belts and so on, because they were, except for 2, they were severely handicapped. And after that first period of panic, then I could settle down. And then each day I loved them more until the last day I didn't want to quit. They were very loving.
In our schools, we have had in Brazil, in Curitiba, we live in Curitiba, we have had this experience with the drivers of the small school buses, that they like more to drive the exceptional than the normal, because the normal always are 2, you know, then the kids do a lot of things, and so their responsibility is higher. And with the mentally retarded, you say, you sit here and don't do anything. You sit there and don't do anything. And also in industrial production, there are phases of these things, these tiring things that you have to do the same thing days and days and days and days and years and years and years. Mentally retarded people can be trained to do this much better than normal people and feel not frustrated about their job.
Tell us about the food message.
Yes, well, we have in Brazil, but they have in the United States, and workshops.
Oh, I know that.
First sheltered workshops and then industrial workshops, where you really go into industrial production. And all this, I think 30 years ago you had just the beginning in the States, I think, I'm not sure. About 40 years ago, we in Brazil started to deal with retarded 25, 26 years ago. In our city, in 1962, we founded the equivalent of NARC in Curitiba. It was the eighth in Brazil, 62. Now we have over 600. We are the largest, the second largest, after the United States, we are the largest, the country with the greatest number of local associations of parents and friends of the retired. Only the United States is a larger such movement country as we are. And all this helps. These are then pressure groups, and you get schools started, and then you get a school started. For instance, our experience when we came to Curitiba, first was a kindergarten for Juliana, then she had to go to another school, and then to a third school, and all these schools had to be founded and had to be started and had to be going and all that. And now we are in the, how you say that in English, orchard to plant lettuce and
orchard.
Yeah, that's where our daughter is now. And she's liking it very much. And then comes also the preoccupation. What is going to happen when we are no longer here?
Mm-hmm.
Then you start already putting the churches into bed, that you have institutions, then you have will have homes where they can live. I think that the country that has the greatest progress in that, and that has done more than any other country, is Denmark. They started it 130 years ago. 130 years ago. I think in the United States you started it 40 years ago, isn't it? Some 40 years ago, something
yeah,
like that.
I think so.
Yeah.
Special education teacher.
Yeah, special education teacher, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How good that you are here, and you were, now tell something of your experience.
Yeah.
What kind of kids have you?
I work with profoundly and severely handicapped, and trainable, and educable. So, a little of each.
And the first day when you met real handicapped people, didn't you go into panic as unit?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't. I don't know why, but I guess that's why I went into the field. I took it real naturally. I think
it was because I was transporting them.
Uh-huh.
And I
no, but this happens with many teachers.
It happens.
And many of them cannot stand it and have to get out of the specialized field, of the special education field. Yeah.
I was also educated before I had the experience. So I practiced with all the equipment and knew all the lifts and all the feeding techniques and everything. So I didn't have the fear that you would have if you were, you know, unfamiliar with it.
I didn't know what to expect.
Well, I think, thank you very much.
Thank you.